America must make amends for the horrors of slavery. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. Juneteenth is a celebration of freedom. The name comes from a combination of the two words and the date, June 19th. On that day in 1865, 250,000 slaves in Texas were freed by a Union Army general who'd arrived with troops in Galveston the day before. The Civil War had ended more than a month earlier, but word of the war's end took time to reach parts of Texas. By the end of 1865, the 13th Amendment had been ratified, formally outlawing slavery across the United States. It was an incredible victory, but the trajectory of systemic racism in the United States did not end there, as we all know too well. Indeed, the real-world impacts of slavery on today's African-American population were front and center in Washington, D.C. this week, as historic hearings and public gatherings convened to discuss, debate, and organize around reparations and poverty, and to offer a vision for a more just and equitable nation. On Wednesday, Juneteenth, the House Judiciary Committee held a hearing on H.R. 40, the Commission to Study and Develop Reparation Proposals for African Americans Act. It was introduced by Democratic Congressmember Sheila Jackson Lee of Houston this year, after former Congressmember John Conyers had championed the bill for decades without success. As the name implies, all the bill seeks to do is establish a study to explore the issue of reparations, but opposition to it is fierce. Among those testifying in support of H.R. 40 were Senator Cory Booker, who's sponsoring the companion bill in the Senate, actor and activist Danny Glover, economist Julianne Malveaux, Katrina Brown, who traces her roots to a wealthy Rhode Island slave trader family, and author Ta-Nehisi Coates. Coates' sweeping 2014 article in The Atlantic, The Case for Reparations, reignited the discussion around how we as a society must make amends for the horror of slavery. On Tuesday, a young African-American reporter, Eva McKend, asked Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell whether the government should issue a public apology for slavery. This was his response.
I don't think reparations for something that happened 150 years ago, for whom none of us currently living are responsible, is a good idea.
Ta-Nehisi Coates opened his testimony before the House Judiciary Committee on Reparations by saying,
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell offered a familiar reply. America should not be held liable for something that happened 150 years ago, since none of us currently alive are responsible. This rebuttal proffers a strange theory of governance, that American accounts are somehow bound by the lifetime of its generations. But well into this century, the United States was still paying out pensions to the heirs of Civil War soldiers. We honor treaties that date back some 200 years, despite no one being alive who signed those treaties. Many of us would love to be taxed for the things we are solely and individually responsible for. But we are American citizens and thus bound to a collective enterprise that extends beyond our individual and personal reach. It would seem ridiculous to dispute invocations of the founders or the greatest generation on the basis of a lack of membership in either group. We recognize our lineage as a generational trust, as inheritance. And the real dilemma posed by reparations is just that, a dilemma of inheritance. It is impossible to imagine America without the inheritance of slavery.
Also on Wednesday, Juneteenth, another rare hearing took place. The Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival, presented a Poor People's Moral Budget to the House Budget Committee. The budget rejects austerity and calls for massive military spending cuts, fair taxes on the wealthy, corporations, and Wall Street, and details billions more in savings from ending mass incarceration, tackling climate change, and pursuing other progressive goals. The budget hearing was part of a three-day Moral Action Congress convened by the Poor People's Campaign, co-chaired by the Reverends William Barber and Liz Theo Harris. It's a renewal of the Poor People's Campaign launched by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in the last year of his life. This is Reverend Barber.
It is tragic in a society where our first constitutional duty is to establish justice and promote the general welfare, that we will allow the injustice of poverty, 43.5% of poor people are poverty and low wealth, and people here who could teach this society, and we would walk away from our constitutional values and walk away from our spiritual values that tell us that it is dangerous for a nation not to lift up the poor.
On Monday, the Poor People's Campaign hosted a Democratic presidential candidates forum with nine of the Democratic hopefuls attending. Opening the six-hour session, Reverend Barber noted poverty was never directly addressed during the 2016 presidential debates.
43.5% of this nation. Not 30, not 23. But almost half of this nation, and any nation that ignores half of its people, is in a moral and economic crisis that is constitutionally inconsistent, economically insane, and morally indefensible.
Former Vice President Joe Biden was the first to speak at the Poor People's Campaign Presidential Forum, to his credit. But to the shock of many, just the next night, he attended a high-end fundraiser for his own campaign in New York City, where he hearkened back to his early days in the Senate, recalling the quote-unquote civility of bygone days, working with two segregationist senators, Herman Talmadge and James Eastland. According to a Poole report, Biden said, "I was in a caucus with James O. Eastland. He never called me boy. He always called me son," Biden said. Of course, for Eastland, a Mississippi Democratic senator from 1943 to 78, the word boy, and much worse, was reserved for African Americans, who Eastland referred to as an inferior race. The backlash against Biden's remarks has been intense. We can only imagine the joy felt by those newly freed men, women, and children in Galveston, Texas, on that original Juneteenth, June 19, 1865. But this week, in the halls of Congress and around Washington, D.C., echoes of their celebrations are manifest as people organize for long overdue racial and economic justice. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.